Welcome back. Please take your seats, and if you could take your seats without talking, that would be even better. Shh. Tell someone next to you to be quiet. I want to remind you, for those of you who have RSVP'd for the major donor and speaker lunch, so this would mean if you RSVP'd, if you didn't RSVP, we aren't expecting you. But if you RSVP'd for the major donor luncheon, that's going to be at 12:45 in the Hampton Room. Okay, I want to introduce Dr. Lisa Del Buono, who's going to introduce our speaker. Dr. Buono is a physician from Traverse City, Michigan. But the reason I wanted to introduce her to introduce Dr. Patz is because she's a part of our CCL Health Action Team. And more importantly, she's a group leader. And as you know, the vast majority of what happens here is because the CCL group leaders make it happen. And so I wanted to give just a little visibility to the great job all of our group leaders do by letting Lisa introduce Dr. Patz.
Well, concern for human health is a subject that is very dear to each person's heart. And human health impacts is a powerful motivator for each of our members of Congress, regardless of which side of the aisle on which they sit. And that's why we are so fortunate to have here today Dr. Jonathan Patz, who has quite literally written the book on human health impacts of climate change. Well, actually, several books, including two textbooks and over 100 peer-reviewed research articles. He has served as health co-chair for the first U.S. National Climate Assessment and was one of the lead authors for the IPCC for 15 years, for which he shared the Nobel Peace Prize in 2007. Dr. Patz has served as founding president of the International Association for Ecology and Health. His work not only describes the health impacts of climate change, but more importantly, the health benefits that are garnered from addressing climate change. He has recently returned back from the Rotary International Convention in Seoul, in which he shared this message. He is a humble man who has received many awards, not only sharing the Nobel Peace Prize, but also the Aldo Leopold Leadership Award, the Millennium Assessment Zayed International Award. He was a UW Romney's Fellow, the Fulbright Scholar Award, and the American Public Health Association's Environmental Health Leadership Award. He is currently professor and John P. Holton Chair in Health and Environment, and he also serves as the director of the Global Health Institute at the University of Wisconsin in Madison. We have a chance to hear from Dr. Patz now, and again as part of our panel on climate and health in a breakout session later on today at 2 o'clock, and I hope you consider coming. Let's give Dr. Jonathan Patz a warm CCL welcome.
Thank you very much. Lisa, that was such a kind introduction, and I also want to thank Madeline Para and Karen Kendrick-Hans for bringing me here. So I want to just follow on what Michael talked about. Michael and I have worked together with IPCC for a long time, and he's been just a superhero. And I want to just follow his talk that you know what this is all about, you know, that we're trending towards the right side, what the future is going to look like according to the IPCC, and what does this mean for species like the polar bear? But remember, as Michael said, the polar bear might not be the only species threatened, because one of the subtitles on this cover of Time magazine was How Climate Change Affects Your Health. And that's why I am here to talk about the so what about public health, why climate change matters. So I'm going to go back 20 years when we published our first article in the Journal of the American Medical Association, Global Climate Change and Emerging Infectious Diseases. And back at that time, Fred Singer wrote a response, and you can read it right here. Fred Singer, of course, is one of the stars in Merchants of Doubt, and he wrote, "Readers of JAMA deserve a balanced account on whether global warming, because of increases in, oh, thank you, greenhouse gases, ooh, okay, it just got unplugged, but you can read that once, so that basically he, oops. He's saying that, you know, we were working on a phantom problem. This strange emphasis on a phantom global problem at the expense of real local and national health problems strikes many as both unscientific and irresponsible." That was the response I got 20 years ago. So these are some of the main areas and why I think that climate change is the most important, largest environmental public health issue of our times, is when you see how many pathways climate change touches our health, be it from heat waves to air pollution and allergens to vector-borne diseases carried by insects, waterborne diseases, food supplies and water supplies, and on the bottom, mental health and environmental refugees. I was at a conference a couple of months ago, and there's already a new thing coming out. Hypertension and preeclampsia in pregnancy in coastal areas in Asia that are seeing salination of their freshwater aquifers. This is public health. I'll just give a couple of examples about the effect of rising temperatures. We've done some modeling in the United States. And if you look at the yellow line, which is current temperatures, New York City experiences 13 days that are hotter than 90 degrees Fahrenheit or 32 degrees centigrade. And from our modeling out of the University of Wisconsin, looking at the future number of hot days in New York City, that will triple. So instead of 13 days that are 90 degrees or warmer, that will be 39 days hotter than 90 degrees in New York City, and this holds for almost every city we looked at in the United States. Now, the heat wave issue is very obvious, but some people pose that global warming's greatest threat may also be the smallest. What is the difference between us mammals and that mosquito on the slide? Besides the fact that you don't fly, and Madeline tells me that most of you don't suck blood. So, right, exactly. Someone said, we are warm-blooded, that mosquito is cold-blooded. So whatever the air temperature is around that mosquito, that's the body temperature of the mosquito. So temperature has everything to do with the development speed of pathogens inside the mosquito. Can we have the next slide, please? So that these, you know, small changes in temperature, next slide, please. Small changes in temperature can really have a dramatic effect on the transmission dynamics of diseases carried by mosquitoes. Now, this mosquito is one that you all know of now, Aedes aegypti mosquito. This carries Zika virus, dengue fever, yellow fever, and chikungunya virus. The range of this mosquito is throughout the tropics around the world because it's a temperature issue. And if you focus in Southeast Asia where you have lots of dengue fever, one thing about dengue fever is that there are a couple of years that were really banner years that show up as those red bands that happen to coincide with the strongest El Nino events that we've had on record until this year. And this is a photograph of the El Nino of 2015 that coincided or preceded the largest dengue fever epidemic in Brazil's history, and also Zika virus is the same family of viruses as dengue fever. It's carried by the same mosquito. And our analysis, which I cannot show you yet, is showing that unprecedented 5 months of historic record temperatures preceded the Zika virus epidemic. But I can't show you that yet. Now remember, you all know, of course, because Michael lectured here, and you know that climate change, it's not just global warming. It's extremes in climate variability, including rainfall. And if you get too much rainfall, like what's happening in Europe, this is a picture taken last week somewhere in France. You know, flooding is a big issue. And for public health, you know, when it the future tells us, the climatologists like Michael and others are saying, look, when it rains, it's going to rain really hard. You know, that's a big problem. How many of you are from Washington, D.C.? I'm from Baltimore originally, actually. Okay. You know what happens after a heavy rainfall. It's not a good idea to drink the water in Washington because we get these combined sewage overflow events that because we don't handle the rain and runoff. So we've done some modeling for the Chicago area, and just by mid-century, there could be a doubling or 100% increase in these combined sewage overflow events because of heavy rainfall events from climate change. Now there's the other extreme, right? Droughts. And there's issues about hunger and a doubling of those at risk of hunger because of droughts around the world. Well, there's another issue. How many of you have heard of the Syrian civil war? This analysis came out of the proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences last year, and it shows precipitation trends in the Fertile Crescent in the Middle East. And what you're seeing are increases in temperature, and I'm quoting from this article, the most severe drought in the instrument record occurred in 2006 and 2007. A record number of immigrants from rural areas, drought-stricken areas, into cities increased the urbanization rate by 50% over 8 years. So in a place already under stress and political unrest, there are questions, and nobody can actually prove this as the, you know, the biggest thing, but when you have this unprecedented record drought and food shocks and a lot of things like this, people wonder if that could have led to the Syrian civil war, where 400,000 people died, 9 million refugees were on foot. And I want to make sure you know I'm up to date when I give a lecture. This morning in the New York Times, a record 65 million people displaced by global conflicts. And to the extent that these indirect effects of climate extremes and destabilizing areas and settlements, this is probably the hardest thing to study, but could be the iceberg under the tip of the iceberg when we think about health and human well-being and the effect of these climate extremes. So I want to leave you with some good news, because the risks of climate change are really dire, but the benefits from combating climate change could be even bigger. In fact, fighting climate change could be free. If you look at the public health co-benefits from a low-carbon economy, this could make climate change policy a net gain and a real win. The opportunity to avoid 7 million deaths every year from air pollution, cardiovascular risks from a high-meat diet, more than 3 million deaths every year from physical inactivity from designing cities for motorized transportation rather than designing cities for people. This is a study out of MIT that showed a systems approach of looking at a clean energy system for the United States and the upfront cost of clean energy versus the benefits from reducing PM2.5 air pollution. And notice this is a quote right out of the abstract, that the health benefits could offset 26% to 1,050% of the cost of U.S. carbon policies. In other words, the health benefit could be 10 times greater, up to 10 times greater than the cost of clean energy. And when you go to your representatives and you start talking about, you know, the cost of getting to renewables, you know, well, there's a study that shows that maybe it's going to cost up to $30 to remove a ton of CO2 from the atmosphere. Nobody wants to pay more money for energy, right? But you've got to tell your representative that that's less than half of the equation, because if you remove a ton of CO2, you also remove all the other nasty air pollutants that kill people. And the average benefit for every ton of CO2 that you remove, you have $200 in health benefits from avoided mortality and hospitalizations. So I want you to have this picture in your mind tomorrow and ask your representative a very tough question. Which number is bigger? Because everyone is just focusing on the cost of changing energy, and they're forgetting about the important benefit to our health. And in other places around the world, this benefit is much higher. Another reminder that the price of solar power has dropped 99% since the 1970s. So this is, it's not, we don't have to wait for technology. We need to get renewables right away. We need a fee on carbon, because it's not just the upfront cost of energy, it's about our health. And I want you to, you know, when you're thinking about, you talk about fee and dividend, really harp on that this is a public health issue. Climate change, it's not just the environment, it is our health. Very quick reminder, another key area, and if you can read that cow, it says, I am full of greenhouse gas, do you have a stake in it? Just an obvious reminder that as we eat further down the food chain, that it's good for our health and it's good for the environment. And one related issue regarding, you know, food and less meat in the diet, a new study out of the journal Lancet looking at, this is the title of the study, Trends in Adult Body Mass Index in 200 countries over the last 40 years. Studies is over 19 million people. These are trends in every region of the world looking at obesity in men and women. So all over the world, this is an issue. And when you think about in the United States, the number of Americans, 60% of Americans don't meet recommended levels of aerobic exercise. And many of the trips that we make by car are really short trips, less than 2 miles or 3 kilometers. So this is why I'll end and wrap this up, and I'll tell you that a low carbon economy can make us healthier and save money, be it through changes in our energy production, our food systems, or in urban design and transportation. So this is really important to emphasize the interlinkage between energy policies, food systems, and transportation urban planning. This is public health policy. Thank you very much.